Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, LOTUS Goes to SCOTUS edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On October 11th, 2017, the Supreme Court heard argument in National Association of Manufacturers versus Department of Defense, a case regarding the proper jurisdiction of federal circuit courts of appeals with respect to rules issued under the Clean Water Act. In 2015, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and U.S. Environmental Agency, the agencies, issued a final rule intended to clarify the definition of waters of the United States as used in the Clean Water Act, the Clean Water Rule. Petitioner associations and companies filed suit in various federal district and appellate courts to challenge the Clean Water Rule, claiming that the definitional changes improperly expanded the agency's regulatory jurisdiction and dramatically altered the existing balance of federal-state collaboration on water resource concerns. Many of the suits were eventually consolidated before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. The Clean Water Rule, petitioners contended, is inconsistent with Supreme Court precedent and was improperly adopted without satisfying the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act. Petitioner National Association of Manufacturers, which had brought its challenge in federal district court, then intervened in the Sixth Circuit litigation and moved to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, arguing that judicial review must first take place in district court and that this case did not fall within the judicial review provisions of the Clean Water Act. The Sixth Circuit ultimately rejected this argument and concluded that it could exercise jurisdiction over requests for review of the Clean Water Rule under Title III of the United States Code, Section 1369B, Subsection 1F. That provision provides for exclusive jurisdiction in the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals to review an action issuing or denying any permit under Section 1342, the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. The question presently before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether the Sixth Circuit erred in holding that it had jurisdiction under Title 33 of the United States Code, Sections 1369B, to assess a clean water rule that did not actually issue or deny any permit, but rather define the waters that fall within the scope of the Clean Water Act. And now, to discuss the case, we have Jonathan Adler, Director of the Center for Business Law and Regulation at Case Western Reserve University School of Law.
This is one of the only environmental law cases on the docket for this term. It concerns the Waters of the United States Rule, which is usually referred to as WOTUS, or Waters of the United States. Specifically, this case concerns whether challenges to regulations promulgated by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and Army Corps of Engineers defining the scope of Waters of the United States are to be filed in federal district court or in the Circuit Courts of Appeals. It's a confusing question that has unduly complicated Clean Water Act litigation for years and should finally be resolved by this case. This specific litigation arises out of the federal government's long and controversial effort to define the scope of regulatory jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act. The CWA requires permits for the discharge into navigable waters. That's true of effluent discharges, such as those that are regulated by the NPDES program, as well as for the deposit of fill material into jurisdictional waters or wetlands under Section 404. Importantly, the Clean Water Act defines navigable waters as waters of the United States. And what has been controversial for decades now is how the federal government defines what constitutes waters of the United States subject to Clean Water Act regulation. Historically, the EPA and Army Corps had adopted a very expansive definition of waters that applied well beyond what most considered to be waters that are navigable, to include things like intermittent streams, washes, dry arroyos, wetlands, and the like. Twice the Supreme Court rebuked those agencies, in 2001 and again in 2006, holding that the agency's interpretations were beyond the scope of what was authorized by the Clean Water Act and were so broad as to raise constitutional concerns. Initially, the Army Corps and EPA dealt with these losses by issuing guidance about how it would apply the waters of the United States, but without actually redefining it in regulations. That changed in the Obama administration, which in 2015 issued a new rule defining waters of the United States, the so-called WOTUS rule. And this rule was immediately challenged in court by states, trade associations, property rights groups, and others, arguing both that this rule, like its predecessor, was too broad and exceeded the scope of the Clean Water Act, and also alleging some Administrative Procedure Act violations in the promulgation of the rule, specifically that aspects of the rule were not a logical outgrowth of the proposed rule that had been published in the Federal Register. The problem for this litigation is that it wasn't clear where the challenges should be filed. Like many environmental statutes, the Clean Water Act requires that some cases are brought in district court and requires others are brought in circuit court. Some statutes, like the Clean Air Act, have a fairly logical division. Rules of national scope get challenged in circuit court. Things that are more localized get challenged in the district court. Clean Water Act provisions, though, don't make as much sense, and it's something that the Supreme Court appears likely to puzzle over a little bit. The text of the Clean Water Act implies that a challenge to something like a WOTUS definition should be brought in district courts, because it does not fit neatly into the specific types of challenges listed that should be filed in circuit courts. But there is some lower court precedent suggesting that circuit courts are where the case should be filed. So in this case, cases were filed in both circuit and district courts. In 2015, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit issued a nationwide injunction against the WOTUS rule, concluding that the petitioners had showed a substantial probability of success on the merits, both on their substantive and procedural claims. In a second decision, the Sixth Circuit reaffirmed that it had jurisdiction to hear this challenge in the first instance, concluding that, at least under Sixth Circuit precedent, this sort of challenge should be filed in a circuit court as opposed to a district court. But the opinion for the court acknowledged that the text of the Clean Water Act certainly would seem to suggest otherwise, and noted the conflict between the plain text of the statute and Sixth Circuit precedent. The problem here is that while it might seem logical to have a nationwide definition of waters of the United States challenged first in a circuit court, such challenges don't appear to be a challenge to an effluent limitation as authorized under subsection E, or a challenge to a permit denial under subsection F. So it's not clear where the circuit court would get jurisdiction to hear this case in the first instance. The National Association of Manufacturers, which had prevailed in the Sixth Circuit, nonetheless sought certiorari on the jurisdictional question, hoping to resolve this statutory interpretation question once and for all. The court accepted certiorari in January to address the conflicting authorities and resolve this question. An added wrinkle, though, was this spring when the Trump administration initiated a rulemaking to reconsider the Obama administration's Waters of the United States rule. The Trump administration informed the court of this and suggested the case be held in abeyance pending conclusion of the rulemaking process, but the court declined, perhaps because whatever the Trump administration does, there will be legal challenges to the WOTUS definition. If the Trump administration adopts a narrower definition that is more appealing to industry groups or property rights groups, environmental groups will challenge. If the Trump administration retains the heart of the Obama administration rule, the current challengers would certainly continue to press their claims. At oral argument in this case, the two positions put forward were rather clear. The states and trade associations that are challenging the WOTUS rule, along with some environmental groups, asked the court to enforce the plain text of the Clean Water Act. The federal government and some other environmental groups argued instead that the court should adopt a more functional approach that allows circuit court review in the first instance of this rule, adding that the WOTUS rule should be seen as a, quote, other limitation eligible for circuit court review under subsection E, and also stressing that the effect of this rule is to impose limitations on certain parts of the country, and so therefore it should be understood as equivalent to an effluent limitation. Going into oral argument, it seemed like the textual arguments had the stronger side, and oral argument did not do much to change that perception. Representing the National Association of Manufacturers, Tim Bishop stressed the clarity and precision of the Clean Water Act's text. And at times, he gave the justices many seminars in the operation and functioning of the Clean Water Act and how Clean Water Act litigation proceeds. It was quite clear at oral argument that there was no one in the room that understands the Clean Water Act as well as Mr. Bishop does. Asked by Chief Justice Roberts whether it might be more efficient to adopt the government's view, particularly given the extensive rulemaking record that each district court would have to wade through in each separate challenge, Bishop noted that there are countervailing inefficiencies uncertainties and a potential lack of clarity if the government's view was adopted. Arguing on the same side is Tim Bishop, Ohio Solicitor General Eric Murphy, also noted that there are significant fairness concerns, which also should be weighed against any efficiency concerns put forward by the government. Specifically, he noted that under the Clean Water Act, those questions which must be filed in the Court of Appeals directly must also be filed within 120 days of the promulgation of the agency action at issue. So a holding that this sort of case must be brought in the circuit courts instead of the district courts would also mean that those wanting to challenge this sort of rule would have to do so rather quickly or potentially forfeit their ability to raise these sorts of challenges ever. Civil justices ask about the rationale of the Clean Water Act's venue provisions, which are less orderly than those under other statutes. And Tim Bishop acknowledged that determining Congress's rationale is difficult in this case. Justice Breyer suggested maybe that Congress was simply more focused on ensuring appellate review of specific types of actions and just hadn't focused on the others. Justice Kagan suggested simply it was a themeless pudding, to which Tim Bishop responded that perhaps, but it was still quite clear and precise. And whether or not the justices or anyone else believe that these provisions have a clear underlying logic, they are clear, and Congress did enact quite specific rules about what should be brought in the circuit court and what should be brought in the district court. Representing the federal government, Rachel Kovner of the Solicitor General's office stressed the pragmatic rationale of the government's interpretation and stressed the value of preventing the irrational bifurcation of challenges to effluent limitations and challenges to geographical limitations, both because such concerns could be combined to individual cases, but also because in both instances, the underlying concern is whether or not certain sorts of activities are restrained or regulated by the Clean Water Act. It's not clear, though, if any justices were buying the government's pragmatic arguments. Justice Sotomayor seemed the most sympathetic, but did not seem that the Solicitor General's office made that much headway with the others. Justice Breyer, who's often attracted to pragmatic arguments and arguments that seek to enable statutes to operate more pragmatically and more functionally, expressed concern about the government's position because of the specificity with which Congress detailed the relevant provisions in the Clean Water Act, and expressed concerns that the government's position did not make it easy for him to get around the statutory text. Challenged on whether the government position would prevent some landowners from challenging a future jurisdictional rule or definitional rule, Kovner would not commit for the government, drawing skeptical responses from several of the justices. Justice Ginsburg asked both sides whether or not this case was potentially moot. As she noted, the comment period on the Trump administration proposal to undo the Obama administration's WOTUS rule had closed, and it's certainly possible that a new regulation could be issued before the SCOTUS term ends in June. But both sides noted that new litigation would almost certainly ensue if the Trump administration adopts a new rule, and that this new litigation would raise the same question about where the suit should be filed, and in all likelihood, any new litigation that is brought would seek a stay of the rule pending resolution of this jurisdictional question. It's always dangerous to make predictions about the outcome of a Supreme Court case, but oral argument largely confirmed the broad intuition that the National Association of Manufacturers is in the stronger position, largely due to the plain, detailed, and specific text in the Clean Water Act. The plain text supports the challenger's position, and the government's position doesn't seem to create as neat and orderly a jurisdictional regime as it might seem at first. So in my view, barring some action by the agencies in question to moot the case, I would be surprised if the National Association of Manufacturers' position did not prevail, and I'm inclined to think it won't be close, that they will prevail with 6, 7, perhaps even more justices. Of course, we won't know until the decision is out later this term, and my prediction is probably worth what you paid for it. Either way, this will not be the last time that WOTUS litigation gets to SCOTUS. Once the court has dealt with a jurisdictional issue, we will, one way or the other, see substantive challenges to the scope of the federal government's jurisdiction under the Clean Water Act, and there's a good likelihood that could end up in SCOTUS as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.